Firstly, John chapter 8, verses 1 to 11. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives, and at dawn he appeared again at the temple courts where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach them. And the teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery, and they made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commands us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. And when they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." And again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And at this, those who heard began to go away, one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left, with the woman still standing there. And Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." And turning over to Luke chapter 7 and verse 36. Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, so he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And when a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume, and as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. And then she wiped them with her hair and kissed them and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of a woman she is, that she is a sinful woman." And Jesus answered him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he cancelled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt cancelled." "You have judged correctly," Jesus said. Then he turned towards the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little." So keep those two stories open and turn back, if you would, to the first story, which we read in John chapter 8. Let me get this right. Are you saying that no matter how bad a person has been, they can be forgiven by God? Well, if that is true and I can be forgiven everything, then it doesn't really matter how I live, does it? Well, that's the question that we're looking at together tonight. If I can be forgiven everything, doesn't that mean I can live as I please? I wonder how you'd answer that question if you had a conversation with somebody in this coming week and they were to ask you that question. Or you're in the middle of explaining what it means to be a Christian, and you've gone to the topic of the grace of God, and somebody says to you, "So that means I can live as I please." How would you answer that question, I wonder? It's another question that, well, a question, a series of questions, which many people are asking today about the Christian faith. It comes from a book which is entitled, "If I Could Ask God One Question." Explain the grace of God to people who are not Christians can be incredibly risky at times. Because the Christian faith, as we've been discovering on Sunday mornings, and we were reminded again this morning, begins with a God who takes a great risk with us in announcing forgiveness in advance of the response that you or I may or may not make. Romans chapter 5, verses 6 to 8, Paul writes, he says, "You see, just at the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly." And later on he goes on to say, "God demonstrates his love for us in this, that while you and I were still sinful people, Christ died for us." Grace is a very risky business to explain to other people. Grace, as Philip Yancey writes in his book, What's So Amazing About Grace, has a scent of scandal about it. Grace has the ability to make us feel uncomfortable. Perhaps these lines from a poem by W.H. Auden help to explain why. Every crook will argue, I like committing crimes. God likes forgiving them. Really, the world is admirably arranged. Or to put it back into the question that we're looking at together tonight, if I can be forgiven everything, doesn't that mean I can do what I like? If I know in advance that I'm going to be forgiven, what's to stop me from taking God's grace and continuing to live as I please? If I can be forgiven everything, doesn't that mean I can do whatever I like? How do we answer that question? And how do we deal with ourselves when we find ourselves in that position where we try to justify our own sinful behavior against the grace of God? Well, tonight I want Jesus to answer that question for us by looking at the two stories which we've just read together. Two stories about two women whose lives have been completely transformed by the forgiveness and the grace and the mercy of God. Let's begin by taking a closer look at this question. I want to take this question in two halves tonight. I want to start with the question of forgiveness. What kind of forgiveness are we talking about? Because I think it's important for us to understand what that means before we answer the question in full. Turn with me to John chapter 8, verses 1 to 11, the story which we've looked at before together. I make no apology for looking at it with you again together tonight, because it is a wonderful demonstration of what the forgiveness of God really looks like in action. Sometimes we find it difficult to put these things into words. Well, here is a wonderful story which helps us to see what the forgiveness of God really looks like when it encounters someone's life. A woman's caught in the act of adultery, verse 3. She's dragged in front of the teachers of the law and the Pharisees and the temple court. She's dragged in front of them and she's left standing in front of this group of religious leaders. The law of Moses, they claim in verse 5, commands us to stone such people to death. Jesus, what do you think we should do? They're setting a trap for Jesus, as verse 6 makes clear. Because they suspect, rightly as it happens, that Jesus would want to say to this woman that you can be forgiven. But that would mean that he was also teaching the people to ignore something in the law of Moses. And so they're setting this trap for him, hoping that Jesus will walk himself into a difficult situation where they can actually do something about Jesus and perhaps even get rid of him. Here's a group of people, no doubt, enjoying their own sense of moral superiority over this woman, whilst at the same time thinking that at last they have Jesus in a corner from which he cannot escape. And so there's a sense of expectation in the air as this story begins to unfold. How will Jesus deal with this? And more importantly for us tonight, what does it teach us about the true nature of forgiveness? Well, there are a number of things I want you to notice. Firstly, we need to understand as we get into this story that we are all in need of God's forgiveness. You see, Jesus' answer when it comes in verse 7 is a devastating answer, isn't it? He says, if any one of you is without sin, let him cast the first stone. I'd love to have been there when this story began to unfold. I would love to have seen the impression on the faces of the religious leaders who thought they had Jesus trapped, who were forgetting about their own hypocrisy, who dragged this woman in front of Jesus, and Jesus says to them, if you're without sin, then get on with the job. The religious leaders are interpreting the law of Moses here to suit their own purposes. The law of Moses stated very clearly that when someone was caught in the act of adultery, both the man and the woman must be brought to account for their actions. The penalty for adultery in the Old Testament was death by stoning. So you can begin to see immediately how the Pharisees are using these Old Testament laws to suit their own purposes. To start with, there is no sign of the man who is involved. It's only the woman who's been brought in front of the religious leaders. And even if Jesus did say that this woman should be stoned, he would immediately set himself on a collision course with the Roman authorities, because the Romans, or the Jewish people rather, had no power to carry out the death penalty on anyone. As Jesus contemplates their question, he simply writes some things on the ground. Rabbis and teachers in Jesus' day often wrote things on the ground to illustrate what they were teaching. perhaps in the same way that we might use an overhead projector or a video projector today. There's been no shortage of ink spilled about what Jesus might have been writing on the ground. Some have suggested that perhaps he was beginning to write a list of the sins of the religious leaders who are standing there in this circle, and this woman is in the middle of them, and Jesus is writing on the ground. But when Jesus eventually answers their question in verse 7, he simply says, "Which one of you is without sin? Because if you are without sin, then cast the first stone." It's a devastating reply, because not only has the woman been caught in the act of adultery, but the religious leaders find themselves caught in the act of hypocrisy. And through Jesus' reply, we learn the uncomfortable truth about ourselves, that we have all fallen short of the glory of God. And when it comes to the nature of God's forgiveness, we are all in need of God's forgiveness. That's why it's important for us tonight to begin to open this question up by thinking about the true nature of the forgiveness of God. "Whoever is without sin, let him cast the first stone." Jesus is saying, you want to get serious about the law of Moses? We will soon discover that we are all guilty before God. And so in verse 8, Jesus continues to write whatever he has begun writing in the sand and the dirt. And in verse 9, those who heard what Jesus said began to give away. And I want to suggest to you this evening that a proper understanding of the grace and the forgiveness of God can only begin when we come to terms with our own sinfulness, and that we are all in need of God's forgiveness. The second reason why I love this story is because it shows us what the forgiveness of God really looks like in action. It's sometimes hard, isn't it, to put things into words. Well, look at this story, see how it unfolds, and you will see here what the forgiveness of God looks like in action. Verse 10, Jesus straightens up and asks this woman and says, "Woman, where are these people who are condemning you? Where have they gone to? Has no one condemned you?" Verse 11, "No one, sir," she says. Then look what happens next. What does Jesus say? "Then neither do I condemn you." Can you imagine the impact that those words must have had on this woman? Mixture of sullenness and shame. Probably quite disheveled, standing there in front of Jesus. These people who wanted to accuse her have gone. And Jesus replies, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." And here you get a glimpse of the forgiveness and the mercy of God in action, as Jesus condemns the sin of this woman whilst at the same time demonstrating great love and great compassion for people who have messed up. Grace does not excuse the sin, but it does treasure the sinner, as someone has written. And it's right, true grace is shocking, it's scandalous. It shakes our conventions with its insistence on getting close to sinful people and touching them with the love and the mercy of God. Whether it's the woman who's been caught in the act of adultery or the religious leaders caught in the act of hypocrisy, the words of grace from Jesus are the same. "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." And you know the sad thing about this story is that those caught in the act of hypocrisy missed out on the wonderful invitation to be reconciled to God. They simply went away. They're like so many people today who prefer to work out their own salvation. This is too risky. They're like many people today who like to see themselves as good enough for heaven. Like people today who take pleasure in throwing rocks at other people to take the attention off themselves. And now with their hypocrisy exposed, more than ever they want to hurl their stones at this woman, but they can't, because they've heard the words of Jesus who says, "If you are without sin, then cast the first stone." Because the grace and the forgiveness of God can only be experienced as we come to Jesus in the way that this woman comes to Jesus. Stands there with all of her shameful acts exposed. The whole point of this story is that this woman chooses to remain in the presence of Jesus. She chooses to stay. And because she chooses to stay, she's rewarded with these incredible words from Jesus. "Neither do I condemn you." As here Jesus makes it abundantly clear that there is no one who is outside the love and the mercy of God. Here's a wonderful story which teaches us something about the true nature of the forgiveness of God. Firstly, we are all in need of God's forgiveness. Secondly, we get to see what the forgiveness of God really looks like. It's shocking. It's scandalous. It's something that this woman doesn't deserve. And thirdly, it teaches us that we need to live out this experience of forgiveness. It's something that has to change us from the inside out. Jesus' last words to this woman are extremely important. He is not afraid to describe her behavior as being sinful, just as he is willing to expose the hypocrisy of the religious leaders. Both the woman and the accuser, her accusers, have sinned. They have both broken God's laws. They both deserve the judgment of God. Sin matters to Jesus. That's why he says to this woman, "Go now and leave your life of sin." Because sin mattered so much to Jesus that he was willing to die on a cross and to bear its judgment and its shame in our place. So Jesus says to this woman, "Go now and live in the light of your forgiveness. Go and change your ways and live your life in response to what I have done for you." And he gives to this woman a whole new purpose in life. So can I really be forgiven? Everything. Takes us back to the question that we're looking at tonight. And the answer to the first part of that question is yes. I can be forgiven for everything that I have ever done, everything that I will ever do in the present, everything that I will ever do in the future. This story shows us that there is no one. There is no one who is outside the love and the mercy of God. That is the great news of the Christian faith. And I know it's warm in here tonight, and some of you are starting to nod off, but don't miss this news tonight. There is forgiveness for everything that we have ever done wrong. And depicting grace and forgiveness in such sweeping terms often makes people nervous. As we hear Jesus saying to sinful people who don't deserve to be forgiven, "Neither do I condemn you," and we think there's something not right about that. Or we read the story of Jesus who tells about a man who runs up a multi-million pound debt that he cannot possibly repay, and he's being told, "I'm going to let you off." Or the story of the prodigal son that many of us know so well, who squanders everything, who walks out on his father, who sells his land, now restored to full sonship as his father runs to meet him. There's something about the grace of God that makes us feel uncomfortable. There's something scandalous about the grace of God because it doesn't work along the conventional lines of fairness that we so often claim for ourselves in our world. And yet the grace of God is at the very heart of the gospel message. And when somebody starts to ask this kind of question, then we know that perhaps they're beginning to understand something of the grace of God. I love the advice that the great preacher, Martin Lloyd-Jones, gave to those who preach and teach about the grace of God. This is what he wrote. He said, "I would say to all preachers, if your preaching of salvation by grace has not been misunderstood," he's saying, "then you had better examine your sermons again, and you had better make sure you are really preaching the salvation that is offered in the New Testament to the ungodly, to the sinner, to those who are the enemies of God. There is a kind of dangerous element about the true presentation of the doctrine of salvation." I wonder, is that how you understand forgiveness and the grace and the mercy of God tonight? As something that's shocking and scandalous, something that we don't deserve. We began this evening with this question about forgiveness. What kind of forgiveness are we talking about? If I can be forgiven everything, then can I really live in whatever way I please? Can I do that? So why can't I live as I please? Well, let me take you to Luke chapter 7, to this second story that we read together a few moments ago, and just simply walk you through this story. And allow this story to show you why we cannot really just go out and live as we please if we understand the true nature of the forgiveness of God. It's a party story in Luke chapter 7 and verse 36. It's a party story that It's a party story in which you can sense the embarrassment of the guests at what took place. I wonder how you'd feel if you threw a dinner party this week and something like this took place at your dinner party. I suspect there'd be more than a hint of embarrassment. Let's take a few minutes to work our way through this second story, chapter 7, verse 36. Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, and he went to the Pharisee's house and he reclined at the table. But this particular Pharisee, a religious leader called Simon, was about to get a thoroughly unwelcomed guest. Read with me from verses 37 to 39. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited Jesus saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, and that she is a sinful woman. Jesus knew exactly what kind of woman this was. She had been a prostitute, and her presence must have made the other party guests feel very uncomfortable. She had brought with her a bottle containing some perfume, and she was crying, and in fact her tears, we are told, were sufficient to wash the feet of Jesus. And out of her love for Jesus, her hair becomes a kind of makeshift cloth to dry the feet of Jesus. Such is the devotion of this woman who has been forgiven by Jesus. Because verse 37 makes it clear that here was a woman who had lived a sinful life. Here is someone, I suspect, who has already encountered Jesus in her life. And as her perfume begins to spread through the room, Jesus tells a story which answers the second part of this question that we began with this evening. And it's a story that shows us that when we have truly been forgiven by God, the question of wanting to live as we please never arises. It can't arise. Read with me, verses 41 to 43, that Jesus tells this story. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50, and neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he cancelled the debts of both. Now, which of them, says Jesus, will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt cancelled. You have judged correctly, says Jesus. You see, there is only one response that you and I are capable of when we truly understand how much we have been forgiven. And it is a response of love. A response of love for God who changes the way that we live. This woman knew that her debt had been cancelled. She knew that she had a debt that could never be repaid. She has been rescued by Jesus from a desperate, sinful way of life. And the last thing that she ever wants to do is to go back to her old way of life. And so you have this overwhelming response of her love for Jesus in this story. An embarrassing overwhelmment of love. Because Jesus has set her free from the old way of living and thinking. Let's read on a little further in the story, verses 44 to 47. Then Jesus turned towards the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house, but you didn't give me any water for my feet. But she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss of welcome. But this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little, loves little. And once again, here's the irony of the story. Simon the Pharisee discovers all of a sudden that he does not love God in the way that he should. He actually discovers that he loves God a little because he, Simon, has not been forgiven much because he has not admitted the sinfulness of his own heart. Simon's like many people today who simply do not see themselves as sinful people who need to be forgiven. He's like the Pharisees in the first story that we looked at together who saw themselves as good people who expected to be rewarded by God. Dutiful people, self-righteous people, people who said the right things, people who were seen in the right places, but had no real experience of God. They didn't know what it was to be forgiven. That's why it's impossible to miss the reaction of these two women in the stories that we've been looking at tonight. Their sins have been exposed for all to see, but they've been forgiven. That's the point of the story which Jesus is telling. And they've been forgiven much because they know the nature of their own hearts. And because they have been forgiven much, they love much. Their guilt has been lifted from their shoulders. There was no question of going back to the old way of living and thinking. The very thought of it seems absurd. It would be like jumping into a river that you've just been rescued from. Now let's put the stories together and come back to the question that we began with. If I can be forgiven everything, and we've looked tonight at the nature of God's forgiveness, and we've seen that it is total and it is complete. That is true. Doesn't that mean I can do what I like? You see, now we're in a position to answer that question as you put these two stories together, because no one who really understands and experiences the grace of God would ever want to live like that. Don't we understand the true nature of God's mercy and His grace? No one can seriously want to walk away and live as they please. No one who has experienced the grace and the mercy of God can deliberately decide to go back to the old ways. No one who appreciates the gift of our forgiveness can walk away and begin to live as if it never happened. Jesus' answer to the question that we're looking at tonight goes like this in John 14. He says, "If you love me, you will obey what I command." Because you see, the woman in the story in Luke chapter 7 that we've been looking at tonight demonstrated such generosity and love towards Jesus because she has been forgiven, not so that she will be forgiven. The religion of the Pharisees goes like this: I obey, therefore I am accepted. Grace says, I am accepted, therefore I obey. And that is the truth that allowed the two women in the stories that we've been looking at tonight to begin a whole new way of living. You see, that's what we've been discovering on Sunday mornings in the book of Ephesians, isn't it? I'm accepted, therefore I obey. Which leaves us with one final question tonight. Which of the groups of people do you most identify in the story we've been looking at tonight? Those who have been forgiven little, or those who have been forgiven much? What's your experience of the forgiveness of God this evening? Somebody who has been forgiven little, or someone who has been forgiven much? Because as Jesus rightly points out in this story, those who love little, we're people who have little understanding of the forgiveness of God. But those who love much, like the woman who breaks this expensive jar of perfume and demonstrates her lavish love for Jesus, is someone who understands the nature of her own heart, what it means to be forgiven, and someone who has experienced the grace and the mercy of God. Whenever you sit in the stories that we've been looking at tonight, forgiven little, forgiven much. How we answer that question will demonstrate just how much we understand the nature of our hearts before God this evening. Because as Jesus points out in that first story, we are all in need of the forgiveness of God. So let's pause there for a moment, because it's fitting, isn't it, that we come to communion tonight. Forgiven little or forgiven much? As we make our way to the cross again this evening, are we people who love little or people who love much? Let's allow God's Spirit just to speak to us for a few moments quietly as we reflect on the story we've been looking at tonight. Yes, it's a question that lots of people are asking today, but it also gives us the opportunity of examining our own hearts tonight as we come to communion. A few moments of quietness.